You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 5 July, U.S. unemployment data due 2:30 today. Expected no change at 4%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Carmen Mepurani, her preferred sector or sectors as we head into the second half of the year, and of course the first little bit of our GNU government, or perhaps maybe it's more about bottom-up than top-down. We'll find out. Craig and Tony, CIO at Embro Capital Investments. Market concentration. What is it? Should we worry? And who is causing it? And thoughts from me, directors buying and selling. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Seeds of positivity are brewing in post-election SA, but US election outcomes will set the tone for the next 5 years, this according to Anchor Capital. Business Day, NASPAS spends 44 billion rand in 10 months buying back shares. Group has mainly funded the buybacks through selling off shares in their Amsterdam listed process. Morning markets, US was closed yesterday for 4th of July. Over in the East, it's mixed. We got Sydney up a 0.1%, Tokyo up a 0.3%, then Hong Kong down 1.1% and Tencent off 0.7%. Commodities green, although mostly by fractions of a dollar. Gold at 2,369, Brent 8,708, Platinum 1,014, Palladium 1,026. Rand is 18.25, Bitcoin 58,900, and top 40 opening call 30 points to the green, which is, 0.03%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Carmen Mepurani, independent analyst. Carmen, appreciate the early morning. We're moving into second half of the year. We're in, I suppose, week one or two of our government of national unity. There is lots still happening out there. We've just had the UK elections. We've got US coming up in a moment. Are you looking at the landscape of our market and at particular sectors and thinking that there's sort of really, really good value there? Or is that too sort of top-down and you would rather take a sort of bottom up and find individual stocks rather than broad sectors?
I think your comment is spot on in terms of top down. As you've mentioned, our government now sort of has been settled. It's to see what happens in the rollout, etc., of the different under the new leadership. But I definitely think going into the second half of the year, we're going to have to focus on the macroeconomic side of it, global as well. You've mentioned it's a unique year. I don't think we've seen so many elections across the globe in 1 year. So that definitely has an impact, obviously, if we see a shift in leadership. But I think going into the second half of the year specifically, number one, is to look at interest rates. The view is that we're likely to start seeing interest rate cuts by the end of the year. But we've heard this before, so it's something to keep an eye on. Number two is the initiation of the two-pot system by September. So that obviously is going to see some inflow, outflow, inflow, whichever way you look at it, back into the market. And I definitely think to keep an eye on the Rand as well. So those three are key. Obviously, inflation leading into the interest rate decision. But those definitely, if it goes the way that we expect it to go, consumer discretionary sectors definitely one to keep an eye on, in my opinion, for the second half of the year.
I take your point. I mean, in a best case scenario here, and I like your point there around interest rates. I was reminded yesterday that end of last year, some folks were expecting six rate cuts in the US. We're now looking at maybe one or two. But if we roll forward to the end of this year and we've got interest rate cuts, we've got people taking money out of the two pots or that savings pot and spending it. And maybe we've got some rand strength, which is taking pressure off petrol, taking pressure off inflation. There is a case where the consumer who has been under immense pressure for, 4 years back to the pandemic, suddenly has a bit of a light at the end of the tunnel and maybe a bit of discretionary spending.
Exactly. I mean, we know, especially going into December, we know how we are South Africans, all joyful. So it might all work in favor in terms of the consumer. I actually forgot to mention as well, don't forget that we've had 100 days of no load shedding. So that too also feeds into positivity, number one, and obviously the ability to function 24/7 for certain industries.
And just, I mean, load shedding was just, it was, I mean, it is soul crushing more than anything else. You mentioned the elections. I mean, elections are obviously important. They obviously matter who's in charge in terms of their political beliefs and the like. I mean, is it as, I mean, and we're having, to your point, a record number this year. How important are they to markets in the sort of medium to longer term?
Well, I'm sure you would have seen what happened to JSE going into our elections. A lot of concern, a lot of pullback, cautionary, etc. But once it was settled and we eventually got our new government, the comfort set in and we were back on tomorrow, back on track. Whatever that is at this point, back on track. So I think it's more a matter of during just the weeks leading up to the election, who the new leadership is, what the expectation is going to be. But my consensus generally is, if it's not too much of a shift, we start settling a few weeks after the election again. So it really does depend. Sometimes you do have a complete shift, let's say from left to far right, etc. Then obviously the concern comes in about deep policy changes and what that impact's going to be on the relevant economy.
Yeah, I take your point. Often it is about that nervousness ahead of the voting and a little bit of jockeying, and then it sort of carries on unless there's major changes. But consumer discretionary, we'll leave it there. That's Carmen Mepuani, independent analyst. Always appreciate the early morning insights.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. But what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with J.P. Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in STANLIB's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. STANLIB Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Craig Antonio, CIO at Anbro Capital Investments. Craig, always appreciate the time from you. Market concentration. I'm seeing a lot of this in my email inbox. I'm seeing a lot of concern on the Twitters and other social media. I suppose let's start. What is market concentration?
Well, hi, Simon, and hi to all your listeners. Thanks again for having me. Always happy to chat. Well, you know, in the context of stock markets, when we refer to market concentration, what we're looking at here really is the degree to which a small number of companies or sectors dominate an underlying index or the market capitalization of that index. And I think, you know, that's probably what people are referring to when you see that in the news and see so much of it at the moment.
And what we've got, I mean, if I look at the South African example, we've had this quite often. At points it's been Naspers, at points it's been Anglo, but of course we're a small market and our index is only 40 stocks. But the S&P, it's what, the top 10 is now something around 40% and pretty much at a record high. So, I mean, it's almost not an S&P 500, it's almost a S&P 10.
Well, I think it's a fascinating point you make, and that's exactly right. And you might remember that about a year or so ago, they actually took down the weight of some of these stocks because they had actually gone so big. Once again, they've just, you know, rocketed again, and now weights are even higher than they were previously. So, I mean, the sheer outperformance of the likes of Amazon and Alphabet, Microsoft, Meta, Nvidia in particular, have lifted the weights of these top 10, as you say, to just shy of 40% of the index at the quarter end. And, you know, it's fascinating to see, but I suppose these are the sorts of stocks that are driving the world and driving the market at the moment. And it's you know, it's a place, we're at a place that we've never been before.
Yeah, and I want to delve into that because, of course, you run the Unicorn Fund. But before we do, I mean, essentially what this is telling us is that there is this handful of stocks, and they are absolutely tech stocks. Amazon, I mean, I think actually the categorization there is consumer. But nonetheless, what it's telling us is that the other stocks perhaps aren't performing as well. In other words, you might have invested in a whole bunch of other shares and you're not looking anything like the index, never mind these top 10.
Yes, well, I mean, there's a lot of debate going on out there now whether something like an S&P 500 is a reasonable benchmark, you know, because it's so concentrated. But, I mean, the point you made with regards to the rest of the market and how well it's done, well, I think let's look at it from a couple of points, and I'll sort of delve into that a little bit now. Mm. It's almost if, you know, what we've seen is the market overall is not performing like these very, very few shares are. And it's almost become what I refer to now as a stealth bear market. So, yep. You know, if you adjust for inflation, the vast majority of U.S. stocks are still lower than their 2021 highs. And interestingly, I mean, if you actually look at the performance of the broader stock markets, it's behaving exactly how you would imagine it would behave when you have things like an inverted yield curve and a higher interest rate cycle and all the rest of it. So higher interest rates, by and large, are causing the economy to gradually slow down. They're restraining asset price growth. And this is exactly what you expect to happen. And on the basis of that, share prices tend to not perform as well. Now, it's easy to say, but you know, a classic example I would mention is if one had to look at something like the Russell 1000 Value ETF, over the last 3 months, that ETF is down 1.35%, whilst the S&P 500 is up 6.6%. So you have almost an 8% spread between those two. Now, I'll put it to you, Simon, that the 10 biggest positions in the Russell Value ETF are companies of real pedigree and distinction. So we're talking about Berkshire Hathaway, J.P. Morgan, Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble, Walmart, Wells Fargo, Chevron. You know, these are really, really good, high-quality blue-chip companies that have delivered great returns over time. And, you know, to the point, they're down over the last 3 months on average, you know, versus a handful of stocks which is shooting the lights up.
That's a great point. And there are a couple of points I want to pick up on here. The first is you make the point around interest rates and what they're designed to do. High rates are designed to slow things down and by default, therefore, bring inflation down. There's also that old adage, which Wall Street is not Main Street necessarily. And perhaps we're kind of skewed because there is that handful of stocks which are doing well, but it kind of belies, and the CNN fear and greed index is in fear territory. It kind of belies what we're seeing. It's suggesting that the American economy, I don't want to say it's in a bad shape, but it is perhaps not as robust shape as an S&P 500 or heck, a NASDAQ 100 would suggest.
Yes, exactly right. And I think, you know, you see it in a lot of stocks when earnings have come out in this last earnings season. You know, there have been a few, particularly on the consumer side, and I guess the most recent one being Nike. Saying that, you know, things are tough out there. You know, they're battling with inventories. They're looking at rejigging a few things. I mean, there's a quintessential, you know, stock which everyone knows and understands, and it's a consumer sort of stock or was a consumer stock, and it got clobbered last week. And, you know, a lot of people look at companies like that, and even, you know, in the Targets and the Walmarts, and, you know, listen to what are saying about, you know, where people are spending their money and how they're allocating their spend. And there are clearly signs that the economy is slowing down. So you're right. I mean, Wall Street and Main Street are showing two very different things at the moment.
You made the point around those top 10. And as I said, you run a unicorn fund. And some of those top 10 are the Metas, the Alphabets, the Microsofts, the Amazons. They are doing well. I mean, this is not, you know, I'm thinking back to pets.com of the dot-com boom, or even Cisco, which, you know, with respect to Cisco, just sold little routers. They are at record profits as well as at record levels. I mean, it's a weird disconnect in a sense. And I suppose we could almost say we've got Wall Street, Main Street, and then we've got kind of AI Street almost in a sense. And if you throw Nvidia, which is undoubtedly expensive by any metric, but there is the tech stocks have sort of divorced themselves from reality in a sense.
Well, you're 100% right. And I think what's happened there, and this is the sort of crazy time I guess we're in, is that you mentioned earnings with these companies or that these companies are delivering and how well they're doing. And they are. I mean, these are very much, you know, the best stocks or companies of our time and of our generation. Mm. And as you know, earnings are growing. They continue to grow and they're growing above average rates. So what that's meant really is that, you know, you add that sort of comfort and earnings sort of sustainability, if you like, to the AI theme, to the Mag 7 theme. And there's a little bit of FOMO going on. I think people want to be in the stock because they're the ones that are performing well. That in itself is creating, you know, sort of perpetual buying in them. Also, people, I think, tend to look at them now as safe haven stocks. And they're saying, well, people are now, you know, using these products or you know, the businesses that dominate these sort of 5 or 10 holdings are almost utility-like in our world now. We can't live without them. They are perhaps now the safe havens where people are parking all their money. But to the point around the fear and greed index, you know, it's showing you that everyone's kind of piling into the same sorts of stocks and the same sorts of investments, but they might be feeling a little bit uncomfortable about, say, where the market is or where the economy is, but they're doing it anyway. And I think, you know, that's something that I guess all investors out there need to just keep in mind.
Yeah, almost a sense of a schizophrenia. But I like your point that these Metas and Microsofts and Amazons are almost the new utilities. I'd never thought of it from that angle. They're as much a part of my daily life as electricity and water is. A follow-up question then. You're a manager. You manage money. You have a unicorn fund. You have other funds as well. I mean, do you look at this sort of disconnect, this concentration, and start to panic? Or do you, I don't know, put your head down and stick to your knitting and say, I'm going to, you know, find the quality, and if the prices are right, I'm going to take that view that investing is around the longer term and not necessarily the next 6 months?
Well, you know, you hit the nail on the head there, Simon. I think exactly investors would, first of all, I would say, would do well in reminding themselves that at least every 12 months or so, markets see a pullback of 10% or more at some point.
Yeah.
That's inevitable. It will happen. You know, the trick is ensuring, of course, that you own the best companies possible based on what your individual goals are or investment strategy is. Then you don't get too spooked when the inevitable drawdowns come. I think when it comes to these types of stocks, you know, they've done literally since the sort of the market turned in October last year. I mean, they've gone up a phenomenal amount and literally in a straight line as well. You know, so it wouldn't surprise me, and it wouldn't surprise many people, I think, if, or we shouldn't be surprised rather, if we see them take a bit of a breather, consolidate a little bit, even come down a little bit from these type of levels. I mean, when I made the point earlier of companies like, you know, Berkshire Hathaway and Johnson & Johnson and Procter & Gamble sort of lagging way behind, you know, when the cycle turns and interest rates start coming down, I guess it wouldn't be too sort of out of the realms of imagination to imagine people taking some money out of, you know, these high flyers and reallocating it to some of these other stocks that are still great quality businesses but haven't done as well. But, you know, when we look at investing, you know, we tend to look at it obviously with a 5-10 year view, and these are just the ebbs and flows that happen in the markets. And, you know, as long as you stick to your knitting and you know why you're buying something, you know, you'll be comfortable with what you own and why. And I think that's how people should look at it.
Yeah, I just pulled up the Johnson & Johnson chart, which is a in many ways a bellwether, and it's back at a late 2020 prices, which of course was a pandemic back then. We'll leave it there. Craig and Tony, CIO, Anbro Capital Investments, always appreciate the insights. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. How concerned are you? I mean, Craig talks around there almost by a bull market, by a bear market, by stealth. Of course, the flip side is those tech stocks are not the dot-com type tech stocks. These are making money. Okay, NVIDIA is expensive, but they will make money. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money can do more when it's investing with conviction. Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to in-depth, broad market research and high-return investment strategies. So invest in a select set of companies with long-term structural growth potential with StanLib's Global Growth Fund. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Thoughts for me on directors buying and selling. I've talked on this before. We have seen a fair mad rush, particularly on the sell side, although we have seen some buying as well. Typically, folks say, director buying, bullish, selling, bearish. I think this misses two key points. The first point is these directors are not experts in valuations. Of course, they think their companies are brilliant and going to dominate everything and take over the world. It's kind of written into their contract as being a director. But buying, okay, that's nice. They put some money on the table, I suppose. And maybe they do know a little more than we do. But I'm not convinced around their ability to necessarily read markets. And selling, sure. But I mean, let's also be clear. The directors are ultimately net sellers because they are paid in shares and taking some of that money off the table is just good old, you know, good old fashioned common sense. So largely, I'm ignoring directors' transactions. Certainly, I don't get all excited if I see a couple coming through. Look, if we see a mad rush for the exits and every director is selling down to zero, which I've never seen before, sure. But otherwise, directors buying, directors selling, yeah, it's of passing interest. That's it for today. We were chatting with Philip Vogts yesterday from PSG Asset Management, the investment case for China. We asked if you were bullish on China. Almost half of you said yes, but cautious. Some 40% said nope, far too risky. The rest were yes, all in on China. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. Return less important than you think.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.